We're back in the book of Exodus, and in chapter 4, we have been thinking about questions we might ask Moses as we think about his life and what his life can tell us. We began by asking, or suggesting that we might ask, if we could, Moses, what was it like to owe so much to so many? Moses, what was it like to have the best of both worlds, the palace and a godly home? Moses, what was it like when faced with choices? He made a good choice. He chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of the world for a season. That was a good choice. But then he just made a catalogue, a string of bad choices after that. Moses, what was it like to go from being a somebody to being a nobody? Not only was he a nobody after having turned his back on palace life, but when he went to be amongst the Hebrews and made a mistake or two there, he became a nobody in their eyes. And then he goes into the land of the Midianites, where he becomes a nobody there completely. What's it like to go from being somebody to being nobody? And what was it like to be out of your comfort zone from having been taught in all the wisdom of the Egyptians? And mind you, that was some statement when we realize even today it's still fascinating. Scholars and archaeologists in the world, what can come out of Egypt. Yet, he had to leave all that behind and go and just be a shepherd. A shepherd, which by the way, was an occupation despised formerly by the Egyptians. So, he was most certainly outside of his, or out of his comfort zone. Moses, what was it like to have an impersonal encounter with God? We then arrived at the burning bush and the statement of take off your shoes, this is holy ground. It wasn't holy because of anything Moses had done or of any object that was there. Everything was very ordinary, a bush, a staff. It was holy because of the presence of God. And then continuing on from that, still at the burning bush in our last study together, we asked the question, Moses, what was it like to get your marching orders? And of course, that's what happened. God says, I am sending you. It was all right taking on board the fact that I am come down, says the Lord, to deliver the people. I've heard their cry and so on. And then he turns around at the end of it all and he says to Moses, and I'm sending you to Pharaoh. And of course then that was where we got the excuses that we looked at in a wee bit more detail last week. But also in the midst of them, and don't forget this, we had that great revelation of God to Moses, his name, I am that I am. You won't have all the answers, and none of us ever will. We didn't have them when people were asking us difficult things in the door. We don't have all the answers. But God was saying, you won't have all the answers, but you will have all there is of me. That's amazing. So, in getting his marching orders, we encouraged ourselves that God will never call you to do something that he will not equip you to do. That's how you can tell if it's the call of God, if you've been equipped for the task. Well, our story goes on today, and we're still in chapter 4, but we're going to read verse 18. So he's been at the burning bush. He has had an encounter with God. God has told him, laid out for him the plan. He has demonstrated his power through miracles and signs. And then we come to verse 18 of chapter 4. And Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. I'd like to pose this question to Moses. Moses, what was it like when going forward involves going back? Because he was going to be going on with the Lord, going forward, but it was also going to involve him going back. Here we find him breaking this news to his family. That's not easy. Many, many people have found that very difficult when the call of God is on their life. It doesn't have to be necessarily that you're going to be uprooted from a culture and a land that you know and going away many, many miles into a different continent. It doesn't necessarily involve that, although of course there are times when it does. But it could just mean even leaving the church fellowship where all your family are and going into a sphere of service as God calls you in another place. And it mightn't just always be that easy. I believe Moses didn't find it easy. And we see that, I believe, in that part of verse 18 that we read together, in what he tells Jethro. Or rather, it's more telling what he doesn't tell Jethro. He's been a wee bit economical there, isn't he? When you think of all that's just happened to him at the burning bush, and now the very first person he comes to is his father-in-law, Jethro. And wouldn't you imagine that you would just spill out all that has happened? You'd want to share it with somebody. And yet he only tells them a very little. In fact, he puts a very different spin on it. Let me go back to my brethren, which are in Egypt, my kinspeople that is, and see whether they be yet alive. That maybe raises another question in my mind. Do you find it easy to talk about the things of God to your family? And I'm going to ask that not just to those of you who have unsaved family, but even believers. Do you find it easy to talk about the things of God to your family? Because in pastoral work I've discovered that there are even husbands and wives who don't always spend much time talking about the things of God. You would maybe be surprised at that. I've had husbands who have landed for a wee bit of fellowship, have a good chat together, and you say, well, we'll come up in conversation. Do you know, I can't really talk to so-and-so the way we're able to talk. That's shocking perhaps to you, because of course the Bible talks about not being unequally yoked together, and it goes far beyond just being a believer and an unbeliever. Let me ask you the question today, as if the Lord were asking you, maybe he is in by his Spirit, married couple in the Lord, do you often talk about him? Do you find it difficult? Parent who's a believer, with believing or unbelieving children, do you talk about the things of God at all? Is it the elephant in the room? Just before coming to the meeting this morning, I realised that there was a missed call and there was a voicemail, and I went on the voicemail and I heard sobbing and I thought, oh, what way is my day going to go? And then whenever the guy got straightened up, he told me it was tears of joy. He'd asked me to pray for his father-in-law, and his father-in-law just got saved. And his wife was a wonderful Christian lady whose dad had no time for the gospel, and it broke her heart. But they prayed and they prayed, and other people were praying, and he's got saved. Any wonder he was crying? He nearly had me in tears too. But I remember in talking to them at different times, I never met the man, but in talking to his daughter and son-in-law, it isn't always easy to talk to your own. Is that not true? And whenever we think about Moses coming to Jethro, he should have really said, God spoke to me. That's not in the conversation at all. He should have said, God spoke to me at a bush that burned, where the presence of the angel of the Lord appeared, and yet the bush never was consumed. He should have said, God, in speaking to me, told me that he had heard the cry of my people in Egypt, had seen their affliction, and he was come down to do something about it, even though 400 years had passed. And here's the big one. He should have said to Jethro, "And God told me that I was to go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let his people go. Not only that, but God told me that his power would be with me. In fact, he proved it to me by turning this staff into a snake and back into a staff again, and by turning my hand into a leprous hand and then healing it again, and saying that I will be even able under his power to turn water into blood." I wonder why Moses didn't go down that route. Was he afraid of what Jethro's reaction might be? Jethro maybe would say, "Enough. Moses, you've lost the plot. All those years out there with those sheep in that wilderness has gone for your head. Go and rub your head with one of these aloe vera leaves and you'll be fine." I do think they had aloe vera all those years ago. But instead, Moses condenses his reasons to just one. "I want to see if my kinsfolk are okay." That makes me think, of course, about ties. You know, it's no mistake that we talk about family ties. Because there are those today who should have been serving the Lord for full time and they're not. And it is because of ties. They're tied. Remember hearing people preach at conferences and conventions, and this little phrase would come up: "Live loose to the world." Didn't just necessarily mean the fleshly things, but it meant loose in every sense. This world is not our home. And not only that, human ties should never come between us and our tie with God and God's service and God's work and God's will and God's purposes. But there is a struggle there. And sadly, many, many people give in. And there were plenty of ties that we can see in the relationship between Moses and those that he had come to embrace in the land of the Midianites. Jethro wasn't just his father-in-law, but was also his employer. Do you find it easy, folks, to talk to your employer? I remember one time asked to do a camp. I'd never done a camp in my life before. Hadn't really done anything with kids in my life. I had no idea if I'd be any good at it or not. And I told you some of this in my testimony. But Keith Lindsay twisted my arm. He says, "We cannot get meal helpers." So in other words, we're at the bottom of the barrel. Would you come? So I said, "Right, I'll see if I can get the time off." And strangely enough, at the beginning of July, when everybody else seemed to have their holidays all booked out and I had nothing planned, I got that week off, and away I went and did it. Had a powerful week, as those of you who have done camp will realise. It is amazing to serve the Lord in that way. And even though it's tiring and hard work, isn't it worth it? Yes. So I came back blessed and full of it. Right enough, I was only in my early 20s, so I had plenty of energy then, and Red Bull hadn't been invented. But a week passed, or in the middle of the camp, Macedonian call came from Cork. "We can't get meal helpers. Is there any chance, Keith, you would know of anybody that could come down and help us at camp at Cork for 2 weeks?" But there would only be 1 week between the week at camp in Portadown and the other 2 weeks. And this is why I'm telling this story. I then thought, well, if my employer will give me the time off, and I said to myself, "There's no way. No way I'll get that time off. This is me safe. If my employer gives me the time off, I'll go down and do it." And you bounty know the story. Yes, I got the time off. Miraculously. Well, I suppose when I think about it, they could do without me any year. But they did give me the time off, and I went down. And that was unheard of at that time. But I was afraid to ask my employer. I wasn't doing it in great faith. And here's the thing. The Lord had gone before. Jethro's 40 years older than when Moses encountered him. They've all gone on. None of us can hold back. You do realize that. Perhaps Moses was, who was now 80 himself, was thinking, how can I leave this man? He's done so much for me. And again, there are ties and there are many commitments and many, many things that say to us, you can't. But we have to remember that God's in control. And he looks after everything, every detail. And didn't Moses owe so much to Jethro? After all, here he is, he just lands as a complete stranger in the land of the Midianites, and Jethro takes him in. Not only that, Jethro gives him his daughter Zipporah to be his wife. And there would be that sense of great obligation. How can I just walk away when this man's getting older and just leave him? The ties that bind. Not only that, there was Zipporah to consider. She had only ever lived in the culture and land of the Midianites. Can you imagine the eye-opener it would be for her to step into Egypt? Worse, she too had been in the occupation of looking after sheep. She would hardly be welcomed with open arms. And as for being amongst the Hebrew people, well, they had always a tendency to despise everybody who wasn't a Hebrew, as you know. Then what about their two sons? Uprooting them, not only from all they know, but from the comfort and help and support of their extended family. And Moses would, I'm sure, still remember what it was like as that little boy to be taken away from Amram and Jochebed and taken into the palace of Pharaoh's daughter. Could he even consider doing that to his boys? And so on, and so on, and so on. But God had spoken. And God was sending him. Back to verse 18, but the end of the verse. And Jethro said to Moses, go in peace. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, go return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. Go in peace. Peace, shalom. It's a blessing. They're really saying, peace be to you. You don't say that to somebody that you're not at peace with. So he's going with his blessing. How different from Jacob's efforts. Do you remember that story? He had been working for Laban, his father-in-law. And he had fancied, of course, Rachel. But then he ended up with Leah. And he ended up with the two of them. But he had to work an extra 7 years to get Rachel. And what a mess that was. But he couldn't get away from Laban. And he wanted to get away from Laban. Moses is different. We read of Moses, he was content to dwell with Jethro in the land of the Midianites. So once again, Moses is going to be out of his comfort zone. You see, when we think that that is going to happen to us once, and that's it, oh, right, Lord, you've taken me down that path, you've taught me that lesson, I've passed that test. We can never ever say that, because some things happen to many a person more than once. There are some folks, and they've had to deal with the shocking news of cancer once, but they've also had to deal with it a second time. There are some folks that they've had to deal with a relationship breakup within their family once, and they've had to deal with it a second time. And we could go on and on and on. Moses is out of his comfort zone once again. And there are those who have been called to serve the Lord and you think, well, I'm called here and that's it. Marie McCarroll served the Lord on the mission field, and whenever she first received the call of God, she went to Canada, but she felt that that wasn't where the Lord was would have her at all. But she went there at the call of God and served the Lord there. Then she ended up in South Africa. But she felt the whole time that she was called to the Indian people. But the Lord had to take her from one continent to another. But it was at the leading of the Lord, and it was obedience to the Lord. And each time it was out of her comfort zone. If God makes a change, it's He who's making the change. As long as it's Him and not us, and He's in it, and He's behind it, then there's nothing to fear. And Moses goes. He obeys. Here's the nobody, taking the first steps in obedience to the Lord, and he has his wife and his children by his side. But that's not all. He's going with the staff of God in his hand. The end of verse 20. Whenever you hear about staff today, it's generally churches bragging, oh, we have so many staff, you know. But my question would be, where's the staff of God? Because that staff of God was a testimony to the power of God. Remember that? That staff of God spoke of the authority of God. Let that be the staff we have. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Evidence that God is among us, that God is with us, that God has come down, that God has heard our cry. And he's going to do something about it. We can have a list of staff, but where's the power? Where are the sanctified lives? Where is the likeness to Jesus? The staff that was in Moses' hand at the burning bush was just as ordinary as the bush and as ordinary as the man who took off his sandals that day. But now it's referred to as the staff of God, the rod of God. See, not only was Moses the property of God, set apart from the world, set apart to God, but so was everything that Moses owned. Do you get that? We are great at compartmentalizing things. Oh, this, that's yours, Lord. But not that. David, blessing the congregation of Israel, 1 Chronicles 29, the end of verse 14 says, "For all things come from thee, and of thine own have we given thee." They were given offerings. But David was reminding everybody and himself, what are we giving back to the Lord? Only what he has already given to us. Paul, in 1 Corinthians 4, 7, asked the question, what do you have that you didn't receive from the Lord? You'd think when we look at our lives and think about our possessions and organize our affairs, you'd think it was ours. Think again. Paul says in Romans 11, "For of him and through him and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever." Of him are all things. And 1 Corinthians 6 and 19, those famous words, "You're not your own, you're bought with a price." And then in Romans 12, on the back of that, we can say, "Present your bodies a living sacrifice, which is just reasonable service." Why? Because it's already the Lord's. We used to sing a wee chorus when I was going to youth fellowship. "I'm yours, Lord. Everything I've got, everything I am, everything I'm not. I'm yours, Lord. Try me now and see. See if I can be completely yours." Simple wee chorus, but isn't it profound? Of course, the staff of God is the staff of God in another sense. That whilst it was an ordinary stick, it was now going to be a channel of the power of God. And that was something Moses could take heart in. And as he walked around and had that in his hand, I'm sure he never left it out of his hand. And as he walked around, he would be reminded of what God can do with an ordinary stick. And we read, whenever we thought about the I ams of Jesus, he is the vine, we are the branches. We're just ordinary sticks. But isn't it wonderful what God can do with an ordinary stick? Verse 21. And the Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return into Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh which I have put in thine hand, and I will harden his heart that he shall not let the people go. And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. I say unto thee, let my son go that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. God seems there to be reminding Moses of his power, and that Moses isn't to shy away from using it in accordance with the will of God. In other words, we could say that God was saying to Moses, keep to the brief. Don't get sidetracked. Moses, this is what I'm asking you to do. This is what I said when I called you and sent you at the burning bush. I'm reminding you of this now that you've told Jethro and you're making your first steps away. I'm reminding you of this. Don't get sidetracked. Have I asked you to be a missionary? Are you reaching the lost in the place you were called to, or are you sidetracked? I remember reading of folks who had gone to the mission field and had begun to work amongst the peoples they were sent to, but just through time they just ended up being administrators. Sidetracked. Then I have to ask myself, as a pastor, am I putting the flock first, or am I going around preaching around the country, making a name for myself? And I've seen that happen so often, to the neglect of the flock of God. But if the Lord called you to be in a place as a pastor, as a worker there, as a teacher and evangelist in that area, what need do we have to go around the country? Especially if there's perhaps the question mark over it that it could be to the glory of man. And we could go on through many, many different things and ask ourselves, are we sidetracked? Keep to the brief. And then we come to a section in the narrative which is perhaps difficult for us to untangle, because we don't get a great deal of information on it, and all we have to go on are these verses. And sometimes when that difficulty arises, we find a mention of it in the New Testament, and that sheds light, but we're kind of left with what we have here in Exodus chapter 24. So we'll read from verse 24. And it came to pass by the way in the inn that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Then Zipporah took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at Moses' feet and said, surely a bloody husband art thou to me. So he let him go. Then she said, a bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision. Now in the passage, there's what we don't know, but there's what we do, and we have to stick to that and see if it helps us. But one thing stands out in that little narrative there, or two things really, help me to get my head around it. First of all, it's obvious that Zipporah is repulsed by circumcision, and that's evident in the story. But also, another thing is that God lets Moses proceed. Go on, because God has stopped him in his tracks here, and God lets him go on, spares his life after circumcision has taken place. So those two things are evident, but I feel they really help us as we come to this passage to understand what is meant here. Moses is stopped by God on the way, and it's something quite extreme, because it's described as the Lord about to take his life. And many people, I suppose I would side with them in this, it was possibly a sudden illness that struck Moses. But whatever it was, they could see together, not only Moses but also Zipporah, they could see that God was speaking through this. Has anything happened in life to stop you in your tracks? And have you been able to say, I know why this has come? Now, I'm not saying specifically that when illness comes, it's a sign that you've done something wrong and God's punishing you. There are plenty of folk who would teach that. There are many godly people who've been ill and who've died from the illness. God has taken them home through those illnesses. He has to take us through something, after all. But there definitely are occasions, and we sometimes shy away from this because we throw the baby out with the bathwater, and we don't recognize that there are times when things do come our way. And God is speaking. And he's had to put us on the flat of our back. Here is something that suddenly happened, and certainly it's going to be fatal. And the thing that makes the difference is that Zipporah circumcises her son. She shouldn't have had to do that. You do realize that, I'm sure. What was the commandment given to Abraham? Genesis 17:11. Ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and that shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. He that is 8 days old, of every man in all your generations, had been left out, been neglected, been overlooked. There was disobedience. Something important, something significant, something that would set Moses' sons apart from the Egyptians, something that would remind them of the holiness of God and of who they were as a people before God, had been neglected. God felt this disobedience just couldn't go unchecked. And notice the timing. He just couldn't let Moses go any further until this was put right. What was the question we asked at the beginning there? Moses, what was it like when going forward involves going back? You know, sometimes we do have to look back and say, where did this go wrong? Where did I lose the axe head from another story? And we must stop here and ask ourselves the question individually. Does something in our lives need to be put right? In 1 Samuel 15, Samuel says, has the Lord great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices? Or really saying there, in a multitude of burnt offerings and sacrifices? And the answer is it as delightful to his heart to have all of this mountain of sacrifices, or just to simply obey? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. Moses was making a sacrifice, you could say. But there's a little niggling thing of only partial obedience. Not just disobedience for Moses' personal benefit, but because Moses was about to lead the flock of God, God couldn't let this go unchecked. Peter in 1 Peter 5 says this, the elders or leaders which are among you, I exhort, who am also an elder. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, not to be going around with a big whip and a heavy hand, neither as being lords over God's heritage, because he is the Lord of the church, but by being examples to the flock. Can you imagine Moses in the wilderness commanding the people to remember about circumcision? Look at the whole law that was going to come through Moses. How could he have been given that, been an instrument of that, been a tool in the master's hand in giving the law, if he himself had failed in that one point? Wonder was it maybe at this point, this is only my own thought, that the Zipporah realizes then, when she sees her husband about to go, she sees the difference that is made with, through obedience. I wonder is it then that she realizes who God is? She's not condemned for her action. But the fact that she hastily responds suggests to me that she was part of the cause of the compromise of Moses. Sadly, this is the last time we have a reference to Zipporah and the boys until well after the Red Sea has been crossed and they've encamped at Mara and at Elim and they've had manna from heaven and water from the rock. After all those items, it's only then in Exodus 18 that we read of Jethro bringing Zipporah and the boys to meet Moses in the wilderness. So it would seem that they didn't go on with him. That they went back to the land of the Midianites. That must have been hard for Moses. What's her question? Moses, what was it like when going forward involves going back? Having to revisit things that were not done and so on. And also physically make your way back to a place that you had not so many happy memories of. And now you're going to do that without your family around you. Verse 27. And the Lord said to Aaron, go into the wilderness and meet Moses. And he went and met him in the mount of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. Notice that God just wasn't speaking to Moses and saying, go. God was also at work in the life of Aaron and telling him to go. And the two of them, in the providence of God, met at the Mount of God. I like that. They had no mobile phones. They had no Google Maps. They have no texting. But God draws the two of them to the same place. And they meet. Can you imagine what has happened if Aaron or Moses, if one or other of them had said, no way. But God was working in both of their lives. What a good start. Are you concerned about family today? And you think that you're just praying and praying and it's all you praying to God, but God's doing nothing. As I said to you in the life of Joseph, do you remember how his brothers were also being molded by God? And Joseph believed that, and that's why he set those tests which had to do with the money and the cup in their bags of meal. Because Joseph believed that God would be working in their lives as he had worked in Joseph's life. And here we find, not only is God working in Moses' life, but all those miles away, God is also working in Aaron's life. I want you to remember, wherever your family are, and wherever they are with the Lord, I believe, and I keep trying to encourage you in this, that God is working in their life. God could be speaking to them at this very moment while you're here. That's the wonder of the God that we serve. May we never lose that. And the two of them come together. Moses had spent 40 years with Jethro, and yet he couldn't tell him all the wonders and all the signs. And Aaron's practically a stranger, and yet he's able to tell him everything. They were on the same hymn sheet, if you like. And Psalm 133 in verse 1 and also verse 3 says, behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. For there the Lord commands the blessing. I was just sharing with somebody through the week how that in past service for the Lord, when it came to our time of outreach in the summer, different events that would happen, always just before that, the devil would come in with something. And he wants to do that in Monkstown. Are we going to let him? You know, he has no authority to just come in. You know how he comes in? He comes in through weak believers. Comes in when we open the door of the flesh. Are we going to let him? Let's go forward in our outreach in unity. Why? Because the Lord will command the blessing. So Moses, so far, sticks to the brief, and there we'll have to leave it for today. May the Lord bless his word to all of our hearts. The song is Jesus, All for Jesus, and because of the words of this song, all I am and have